B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
All right, so the 3 o'clock hour of the Mike Missinelli Show is brought to us by Corpolis Bakery and Deli, world-famous tomato pie and hoagie party trays. Every bit is good. We're going to hear from Serena Winters a little later this hour because we were able to hook up with Phil Martelli. He was in meetings with his Michigan basketball team. And, of course, he needs no introduction now. An assistant coach to Juwan Howard at the University of Michigan, longtime the St. Joseph's Hawks coach who was there every day when some 16-year-old kid named Kobe Bryant from the Way would wander into the gym and join pickup games. We welcome Phil Martelli. Phil, how you doing?
Hey, Mike. How are you?
It's a tough day in Philly, as you can imagine, with this whole thing. And, you know, one of the things I thought about was the beginning and this legend of Kobe that grew, that actually started at the St. Joe Fieldhouse. And I know you were there for the whole thing. Can you share some stories and what it was like to see that develop?
Well, I was thinking about it overnight, Mike, and the first time I heard Kobe's name was John Griffin and I interviewed Joe Bryant to be an assistant coach. John was the head coach. He asked me to participate in the interviews, and during the course of the interview, Joe said to us, I have a 13-year-old son who has been playing in Italy, but when he gets here, he'll go wherever I'm working. And he's going to be an all-timer. And I remember rolling my eyes, and Joe left, and John and I had a discussion and said, man, that's a real proud dad. And here we are today. And he is an all-timer. And the stories of the pickup games pale in comparison, though, Mike, to what took place. Kobe's junior and senior year at Lower Merion, he would play Tuesday and Friday night, and he would be playing Radnor or Pencrest or Upper Darby or whomever on a Tuesday or Friday night. On Wednesday and Thursday night, he used to come over to the Fieldhouse. And as you know, the Fieldhouse, we had the court where the teams practiced. And then we had a rec complex right next door, four courts, none of them wood. Kobe was on a guest list, as were almost every good player in Philadelphia. They would come over, and some guys would take advantage of it and come over, and they would play pickup with, you know, Mike from the third floor dorm or whatever it would be. And they would get their run in, and they would go home. Kobe would come in, first of all, every day that he came in, he would poke his head in my office and say, thank you for letting me in. And then he would go on a backcourt, and he would be running with a parachute. He'd be with a guy who was holding a rope as Kobe was working on his footwork or his speed. Very rarely did he pick up a basketball, and he was always in the back. And there were no students. There was nobody that really knew. But every Wednesday and Thursday, and it was just this work ethic that was extraordinary and was different. So when the idea came around that he was going to skip the draft, skipped high school, it wasn't a surprise because he had really worked for that moment in time. The pickup game and the, you know, the stories, and I'm sure they've been repeated about what he did with the Sixers, that was really orchestrated by John Lucas. John Lucas kind of ran the gym. He let in who he wanted to let in. And Kobe kind of bypassed the college guys. So it wasn't like he was coming to the Fieldhouse and playing pickup with my guys. Mm-hmm. Maybe he was going to Villanova. Jay would know better than I would. But he was coming and testing himself against the pros. Some of them were wannabe pros, and some of them were legit pros, and some of them were draft picks. And he was playing in those games. And every day when you would be in that tiny office, which was right next to the court, somebody would come in and say, you can't believe what he just did, or he's the best player on the court. And it wasn't a golden era, obviously, for the Sixers. but I didn't know how much of it was the, you know, the Philadelphia hype and how much of it was real, because there wasn't a lot of time that I spent watching the pickup. But he was there, and he was the lone non-pro that was included in those games by John Lucas.
That is, I mean, these stories are incredible, because you've been around kids your whole life in coaching. The mentality it takes, like, he's 15, coming into the gym with a parachute. He's got the confidence to go up against pro players. I mean, you don't see that.
Mike, and how about go a step further? How about the character to poke his head in my office and say thank you? Like, it's mind-blowing. And you know, there was a lot of criticism. Well, why is he skipping college? And he could have gone to any school in America, and his dad was an assistant at LaSalle, and he should have gone to LaSalle for a year. Some people are preordained, but with that being preordained, he worked. And I would say to people, you know what? Whatever he gets, he has worked to get there. It wasn't given to him, and it wasn't, you know, because your dad was in the NBA, you deserve to be in the NBA. And just when you take the visual, you know, there's so many pictures out there. But if you go back and find the picture of his first interview as a pro, and then compare him to like the physique, that took hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours. And could anybody do it? No, you have to have a certain skill. But he worked for everything that he got.
Yeah, and you just wonder where a mindset like that comes from. He grew up in Italy, so he grew up with a well-rounded background. But his father was an immensely talented player, but he didn't have that kind of mentality.
No. Joe didn't have that mentality, and maybe a lot of that era didn't have that mentality. You know, there was a certain point in time, Mike, where this crossed over into these players realized that they had to spend hours on their private corporation, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And that everybody got a guy, you know, I had a workout guy. He was with a guy who orchestrated and ran those workouts. So there was a vision that wasn't common at that time. And I think that it's been emulated by all of these players. Now, you want to have, you really aspire to be a champion, then here's what it takes. So anybody that would, Mike, I locked him, and hopefully, you know, like there's a statute of limitations on this. I locked him in the St. Joe Fieldhouse on July 4th one day. I locked him in the building. The building was closed. There was no security around. I was in there getting ready for recruiting, which started on July 5th. I was going to be on the road for most of July. I heard the ball bouncing. I poked my head out, and Kobe was in there shooting and working out with Lynn Greer, who was a high school player at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Lynn Greer and Kobe were working. I went back in. I did some more work. I got up. I said, you know what? It's July 4th. I'm going to get out of here. I walked in. They were in a full sweat. And I just said, something came over me. And I didn't say, you guys have to go because I'm not going to be here. I said, listen, you know what door to go out. No one else comes in. And if security comes by, just bail coach out and say, coach just said he's grabbing his lunch and he'll be right back. I locked him in there as a 15. He was 16 years old.
And he must have stayed there for several more hours.
He may have. I don't think he was worried about, you know, fireworks or anything. He was worried about it improving his game.
We're talking to Phil Martelli, now an assistant at Michigan. Phil, I don't know if you know this, but I tell you something I've wondered, because you see what kids do today that are immensely talented. They go to these basketball academies. They go to schools that are created to put a great basketball team on.
Yep.
And he went to school at Lower Merion. He stayed at Lower Merion. Even he had this all-world talent. Do you know the story behind that?
I don't. But I do know this, Mike. I have thought about this overnight. Look, Philadelphia's hurting. The basketball community's hurting. The Philadelphia basketball community, which is very tight, is hurting. I think that all of us have to take time to think about Laura Murrian and Greg Downer. And Kobe's name is on their gym. That's a public school. And I don't know all the, you know better with your legal background, but, you know, a public high school to name something after somebody seems to be kind of a messy subject, very involved. But that's what he did. And I can tell you number of times that I've talked to Greg Downer, and Greg Downer said, "Oh, I just got back from L.A. I went to the finals game," or, or, you know, we needed this to take care of the kids to go to a camp at wherever, and Kobe took care of it. He never ever forgot. And yeah, he put on a little bravado when they were in the finals, and he had a lot to say. But go check the YouTube video of him celebrating the Eagles' Super Bowl win. He was a Philadelphian through and through. And I think that the challenges that they all face, and all these young gifted players, go to this prep school, go to that prep school. You know, don't worry about education. Nah, that wasn't Kobe. Kobe was going to honor his family by staying at Lower Merion and staying with Greg Downer.
And he honored his teachers, too, that taught him science and English and math. And because I know that he told me personally about it, one teacher that had an influence on him. Phil, this has been great. I know you're in a different kind of mindset now. This is you're coaching in just a fantastic league. I'm just curious to know what that's like on a day-to-day basis in that Big Ten and the difference being in that kind of, you know, frenzy.
Mike, it's exhausting, but it's like a real adrenaline boost. I would say to you that every game feels like the second game of the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. So it's a 1-8 matchup, it's a 2-7 matchup, it's a 3-6, it's a 4-5, and from afar, I always thought this was a bruise it, you know, bang them leg, and all they did was worry about, you know, guarding and guarding and guarding and guarding. The offensive minds in this league are challenging. They are extraordinary. It's been just an unbelievable experience, and obviously we've taken our bruises, but that's the only way I could describe it, is that every one of these teams has size at all positions, and they have offensive minds. This is coaching at the highest level in this league.
Phil, how interesting is it for you now as a recruiter on a completely different level to go into the house of, like, you're not limited at all. You can go into any house recruiting at this level. Is it different?
Well, yeah, it's different, but it's still relationship driven. It's still like, for my time at St. Joseph's, I was only interested in recruiting guys that wanted to win a championship. And yes, I talked about winning a national championship, and I talked about them pursuing their dream and becoming an NBA player. So that's not really that's not there. And they just want to know that you're genuine, that you're going to take care of them in the good times and the bad. And that's certainly one part of it. The other thing is that Juwan's presence in the basketball world is just overwhelming. So we are able to pick up the phone and get connected. And entree into a home is there because of what he's done, and what he's done as a man, not what he's done in the Fab Five, because most of these kids don't know it, and even some of their families might not know it. But it has been it's been exciting, and it's been challenging, because sometimes you're used to talking to people about, you know, what 4 years at a school can do for you. And in some cases now, I'm talking to people about, listen, 1 year, here's where we can take this. If you do your part, we'll do our part. So we're not shying away from that. If that's the young man's destiny and he's worked hard enough, then we will be supportive of it. But, and in order to play in this league, those are the kind of guys that you have to be in front of.
Well, I know one thing. There ain't no Larry's belly filler in Ann Arbor. But by the way, that was one of Kobe's favorite spots right there.
It was Kobe's favorite spot, but I'll give you a quick one. I went down the street one day. This was when I first got here, and there's a place called Mr. Spots, and it said home of the Philadelphia original sandwiches. And I parked, and people will laugh about this. I was going in to get a haircut, you know, the 5 minutes that it takes to spin me around in a chair. And I poked my head in, and I looked at the guy, and I said, I'll be back, and I'll be the determining factor if this is an original. And I walked in, and there's a wall dedicated to Tom Brady. Tom Brady has this spot. Mr. Spots has them cater every time he plays in Detroit. And I said, Tom Brady. I said, yeah, that's beautiful. In Philadelphia, if you say Tom Brady, the first thing somebody says is he stinks. I said, he threw for 505 yards in that Super Bowl, but he stinks. And the guy goes, yeah, because of him. And they pointed to Brandon Graham. They had a Polaroid picture of Brandon Graham sacking him because that's where Brandon Graham goes when he comes here.
Oh, is that right? So was it a legit Philly sandwich?
It's a legit, the role.
Not there yet. Phil, listen, a pleasure touching base with you, man. Thank you for all your stories. All right.
Thanks for including me.
Phil Martelli with some interesting stories about Kobe in the old days. And that's interesting. I never knew that he would do the parachute workout 2 days a week between high school games. Seriously, think about that. You're 15.
I know.
It's just like, where do you develop that kind of mindset? I guess it's like you grow up, you watch your father play pro ball in Italy, and there's all a frenzy in Europe the way it's different. And you just get intoxicated with it, and you want to do it.
And everybody wants to be better. He didn't want to just have to play a little bit in the NBA and play in Italy. He wants to be better than his father.
Yeah.
So that probably had a lot to do with it.
Well, and that's, they from, you know, everything I've read, his mindset applied to every facet of his life, too. So when I've been saying in my updates, Academy Award for Best Animated Short Film, he called, like, J.K. Rowling every day to get advice. Like, he wanted to talk to the greats at what they did to find out how he too could have become
amazing.
Great.
He had a lit up mind. Ralph and Aston, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Ralph.
Hey, Mike. Today seems to me, I'm 64, and I remember when John Kennedy passed away. And today is a day where everybody's going to remember where they were when they got the news of Kobe's passing. Now, I was at my daughter's house spending time with my grandson and granddaughter when my daughter said, Dad, did you know Kobe passed away? And I said, are you kidding me? And I went home. Now, I wasn't really a big Kobe fan because I went to Chester High School. And Kobe put a dagger in the Clippers' heart.
Yes, he did.
Also, he didn't play for my favorite team, the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yep.
But you don't know about the man, you know about the player. So I went home at 3 p.m., watched all the commentaries, the stories about Kobe Bryant until 1 o'clock in the morning. And I can say proudly today that I'm one of Kobe Bryant's greatest fans.
That's a good story. And, I think that we all learned a lot more about him yesterday. And, I read a lot of stories from the past and the stuff that he was involved with and the people that covered him and what he meant to everybody that he was around. You know, I'm thinking of, Phil brought up Greg Downer, who is the very successful coach at Lower Merion. Now, Lower Merion has always had an okay basketball program. I remember when I was a lot younger, Lower Merion would always playing in the state tournament, but Kobe turned that into a nationally known like basketball. And from that moment that Kobe left, they've been a state contender most every year. And Greg Downer is the coach of that. Now I tried to get him on. I know him, and he's totally devastated. He isn't hiding right now. He's not talking to anybody. He's just totally ripped apart by this whole thing.
Yeah. So, That's got to be really tough. That's got to be, And you know, Phil Mitch and all the stuff he's done for the school since, and probably done for him individually, kind of to pay him back for what he did. That, that's got to be just terrible. I mean, you've got a 20-some year relationship with a guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. One line has opened, so if you want to grab it, it's 610-632-0975. I'm looking at the McDonald's All-American roster. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
The East team. Tim Thomas.
Really talented.
Tremendous recruit that year. Like, was one of the top recruits in the nation. Villanova wound up getting him. Steven Jackson.
Really? That guy could hoop, too. Nuts.
Oak Hill County. I didn't know it. Jermaine O'Neal.
Cabal.
Who went right to the NBA from that game, from South Carolina. Shaheen Holloway wound up going to Seton Hall.
Remember him.
A very good player. Rip Hamilton, Kobe, and I don't recognize the other guys. The West roster had Mike Bibby.
Yeah.
Mateen Cleaves, Corey Benjamin. They all played in the NBA. And that was about all the guys that I can see that really made it. Lester Earl. I remember he went to LSU. All right, let's take Marty in Roxborough. Marty, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Marty.
Hey, Mike, thanks for taking my call.
What's up, Marty?
I'm a long-time listener. I'm a first-time caller. I think you guys, between Tyrone and Nat and yourself, do the best job on TV and radio.
Thank you, sir.
I really mean that. And one night I'll buy you something over at Carlino's, because I know that's one of your favorites.
Oh, beautiful. Spots. Yes, it is.
And now listen, I got to give you a quick synopsis, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
My wife works for Lower Merion School District.
Mm-hmm.
And way back when Kobe Bryant went to the prom with Brandy, my wife says, come on, we'll go over to see the kids at the prom. So we're hanging out where all these, you know, high school seniors are. And she goes, you know who that is over there, Marty? I said, who's that guy? She goes, that's Kobe Bryant. I said, really? I said, I want to go over and introduce myself to him. Which I did, and he was very polite, very professional, and that was my first endeavor. But here's the funniest thing, Mike. I grew up in Ballard, Kenwood, and I'm a graduate of Lower Merion.
Mm-hmm.
And my friends and I used to go over to St. Joe's Field House and sneak in where the custodians wouldn't see us,
mm-hmm.
and the maintenance guys wouldn't bother us, and we'd play on a basketball court.
Mm-hmm.
So later on, you know, I used to hang out there to watch the guys practice. The Sixers were practicing there. And here comes Kobe Bryant. And at that time, Jerry Stackhouse played for the Sixers. As I'm watching
that. Sounds Jerry like Tyrone's story. You had the same story, that Jerry Stackhouse story. Go ahead. I'll continue it.
Mike, this is a true story, Michael. I'm watching Kobe play against Jerry Stackhouse. And Jerry Stackhouse was a first-round draft pick back in the day.
Yes, he
of
was.
The Sixers.
Yes.
And Kobe tore him up. Mike, it was...
Yeah, the same day. It's the same story Tyrone told me before the show that he saw.
This is the fact. This, I was sitting in the field house at St. Joe's, and I'm sitting around a couple of my buddies, and I go, look at this young kid. When I tell you, Mike, he tore Jerry Stackhouse. It made him look like Jerry was in elementary school.
Thanks, Marty. This is the same exact story you told me. You were there, and you saw the same thing.
Same thing.
Were you there together with Jerry?
Must have been there with him. We must have been there. The only reason I was there is because my friend Ryan Rollison and...
You wound up playing at Temple.
Ended up playing at Temple. Pennsylvania guy. Ended up going to Faith Christian Academy afterwards. Kobe was better than Stackhouse, who was a first, like, you know, he played 10 years, 15 mm-hmm. years in the league. He was better than him when he was in high school. Like, he was.
Well, that's what I say. I've heard of many of these stories where he went there and mixed up with all these guys that were pro players, the Sixers, and just said, like, I'm just going to show what I'm going to show you. I mean, that's an unbelievable mindset for a 16-year-old kid. Like, a 16-year-old kid, oh, my God. You know? He worshipped it and welcomed it.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to hear from Serena Winters in 5 minutes. Of course, her time covering Kobe out in L.A. 610-622-0975. We're back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, it's 3:32, Mike Mussinelli Show. No Twitter poll today. The Twitter poll normally brought to us by Paul B. Moore and Sons, because we're obviously deeply involved in the topic of the untimely passing Kobe Bryant. Shocking and surreal. And Serena Winters, who you see on NBC Sports Philadelphia telecast of the Philadelphia 76ers, has a very interesting connection with Kobe, going way back to her California days. She's a native of Orange County, covered the Lakers, and we asked her to share some of her thoughts here. Serena, thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
You got it, Mike. Yes, I think a lot of us, we hoped we woke up this morning and it was all a dream.
It's so, the surreal part is, you're covering a game Saturday night. I was at the game, and his name comes up because LeBron James passes him on the all-time scoring list, and then you wake up the next day and something like this happens. It's why it doesn't seem real. And you know, from your perspective, being close to him, obviously you covered him and you knew him. What kind of emotions hit you yesterday?
What a question. What type of emotions? They're honestly, Mike, they're still hitting me today. Realizing what an impact that he had on my life, especially professionally, and little things that he would either say to me, or messages of encouragement, or pushing me. I'm not the only one that's going to say he made me better. He made me better at my craft, and he made so many others around him. Like, you didn't have to be his teammate. You didn't have to be his coach for him to build a relationship with you and respect you and want to learn from you, because Kobe just admired work ethic. He just admired you working hard. So you had to come prepared with the question. You had to come prepared to respond back to him. And I grew up playing basketball, Mike, in Orange County and watching the Lakers. And when I finally knew I wanted to be a sports reporter and getting to cover him, you know, I was an intern for the Lakers during his last championship, that 2009-2010 season. I was there for game 7 over Boston, and I'm so thankful to have been there to cover, you know, him in the final years of his career. I was there for his final game where he scored 60 points. And I have to tell you that being in Staples Center for that experience was the most incredible sports experience of my life, because the energy in the arena that he was able to create, you could feel it wasn't just the energy in the arena. It was the energy of everybody watching his final game, these years of whether you thought he was the hero or the villain. These years culminating for this one moment of respect, whether or not you loved or you hated him, you had to respect him. And yesterday, today, and seeing the flood of messages that have poured in, whether it's people from my professional life or people that I grew up watching the Lakers with, you know, and texting me about their memories, he had such a profound impact on so many of our lives. And I am so thankful that I was able to have been a small part of that, because I'm telling you, Mike, he made me better at my craft, and he pushed me. And even when I came here and switched from the Lakers job, he congratulated me for that. And he did not have to do that.
There's a picture that I just saw on the website, NBC Sports website, where he's hugging you, and that's got to be like an all time keeper for you from this moment on. You playing basketball in Orange County, obviously the influence of him and the aura that projects in that area for him. We claim him here as a Philadelphian. The fact of the matter is, he was L.A. And he forged his craft on a stage in L.A. What did he mean in Los Angeles?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, he was everything in L.A. in terms of a sports figure there. That was something that, here's the thing with L.A., there's so many transients, right? And there's so many people coming in and out. Not everybody is from there. But what you could all relate to was Kobe, because everybody, for the most part, was a Kobe fan, or you respected Kobe. And, you know, what's interesting, and this, I just thought of this, and it brings my tie back to Philly and to Orange County. There is a Philly cheesesteak spot in Orange County that I would frequent. And let me tell you, the Philly cheesesteaks aren't like the ones here in Philly, just as Kobe would tell you. But there is a photo of Kobe dating back over 20 years ago in that cheesesteak joint. And you walk in there, and you just feel like that's his place, right? Like there's just something about him there. He's synonymous. He's synonymous with the city. I think, you know, yesterday watching MSG, Madison Square Garden, put the lights purple and gold on their arena. I mean, come on. I mean, it's just, I struggle for words to tell you what he meant, because there's no words that can really tell you.
Well, it's really interesting that you're obviously a Laker fan, and you're idolizing, you're a basketball player. You get to the Lakers. What's it like the first time you meet him? And then try to trace for me your relationship from that point on, because you did mention it. He challenged you as a media member to be better.
One of the memories that makes me laugh, this is one of my first times covering Kobe as a reporter and actually being in the locker room pregame, you know, where you ask questions. And Kobe wasn't exactly like a pregame media speaker, as, you know, as a lot of the stars aren't. And I remember kind of waiting by his locker, and you don't know, you know, you're like, does he speak? Can I ask him a question? That type of thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember just saying, like, hey, Kobe, like, how are you? Like, as he passed by, and I remember him not saying anything. And he went into the training room, and as he's going into the training room, I raised my voice a little and said, hey, Kobe, how are you? Like, because I didn't get a response from him the first time, right? And I was like, I am not going to let this first interaction with him from a reporter standpoint be that he can't hear me and just walk away. He walks out of that training room, looks me dead in the eye, and says, hey, I'm doing well. You know, how are you today? And that was where the relationship for me really just, it skyrocketed from there. And, you know, I one woman show to start my career in LA, and I would travel with, you know, the tripod and all these crazy accessories, and you're doing interviews on your own, but you're also the camera person. And I remember sitting in the front row of a press conference, and I had all these weird contraptions, like on my laptop, trying to do it all. And afterwards, Kobe asked, like, what do you have going on here? Like, what are you doing? Because he was interested in other people that he saw working really hard at their craft. He took an interest in that. It wasn't just about on the court. So that's one of many. And, you know, a couple years into it, I can remember I was in the tunnel pregame speaking to a woman that I wanted to gain her respect and get to know her. And there's a tap on my shoulder. And who is it? It's Kobe, who knows her and just came by to say, hey, she's good people, and kept walking. But those words go such a long way to help somebody like me in my career. And he doesn't have to do that. And that's the type of person that he was, even though people want to, you know, some people want to say that he's a jerk or this and that. That's the type of person he was, though, Mike.
Yeah, it's very interesting. The last thing, I'm reading what you had to write on the website, and you said it wasn't just the people in the court. It was also the media members and PR staff, people that worked in your organization. He made everybody better. Once you gained the respect of him, then you were accepted. So how were you able to do that?
I think it's simple. I think it's simpler than people think. It's have his mentality. Work hard, don't let anybody stop you, and always try to be better every single day. It's simple. It's a relentless work ethic. And although people might think it was difficult, if Kobe saw that in you, that's all that mattered to him.
So it made you think twice
when you were asking him a question. You had to dig deep into what question would he appreciate, because that's how you gain respect and get mutual respect from him.
Absolutely, but it's not that he had to necessarily even appreciate the question, Mike. As long as you came prepared at your craft, even if he didn't like the question, you know, it didn't. There's plenty of questions that I asked, or that other media members asked, or other people asked throughout his career that he still respects. It wasn't a matter of whether or not he liked the question or could appreciate it. It was just, did you come ready to do your homework? And if he was going to challenge you, which he certainly did, if he was going to challenge you, then make sure you're prepared to challenge back. And Mike, I just remembered, I was at this practice. I'm not sure if you heard about this, but I walked into a Lakers practice back in the day, and this guy, Kobe Bryant, is chewing out the guys on his team. If you remember the infamous soft like Charmin practice,
oh, yes,
is what he was calling his teammates.
Oh, yeah,
I was there for that. I walked into that. And I was like, what is this guy doing? But that was the type of guy he was. He is going to challenge you. And it was just, can you respond to the challenge?
Yeah, well, when you got a guy like Kobe Bryant, you have to, or you perish, I guess. I mean, he's not going to give quarter. And that's been evident as we trace his life from age 15 on. Serena, listen, great stuff. We really appreciate it. I wish our conversation was about a great victory on Saturday, but obviously this is a day where we're really delving into what Kobe Bryant meant to everybody.
No problem, Mike.
Thank you. Serena Winters. Interesting stuff. 610-632-0975. Mike Misnelli Show, back after this.
The Mike Misnelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Mike Misnelli Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. We had fully intended to at least bring up the Saturday game where the Sixers came through in a big way with both their big players taking the reins. And, you know, it struck me with this, as the Kobe Bryant story unfolded, the standard that we hold players to in this city, especially basketball-wise, and when we always talk about the standard we want Ben Simmons to play at, it's basically Kobe Bryant. That he and Michael Jordan created that standard that we judge everything else by.
100%. And yeah, it was, unfortunately, it doesn't seem so important anymore, but in a court with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, Ben Simmons was the best player.
Yep.
He was the best player on the court with one guy I think's a little overrated, and one guy who's at worst the second best player to ever live.
Mm-hmm.
And the best player was Ben Simmons.
Yes.
And all we're asking is, hey, Ben, do that all the time. Go be the best guy.
Yeah, and I kind of knew it was going to happen, too, because he's turned on by certain moments.
Mm-hmm.
And so that moment is, okay, I'm going to guard LeBron, and I'm going to have to get my respect from him on the other end as well. It's almost like he needs somebody to slide him into an extra gear.
Yeah, and then the maturity that you hope comes, and he's still 23, is that's there all the time. Or he knows to dial it down against the Hawks, but still win the game. And then be there. You get what I'm saying? These guys know how to do it. The greats know how to do it. Or you can coast a little bit in the first half, but as long as you're there at the end, you get the last 8 points, you win the game, you go home.
Yeah.
You just hope that as he matures, it gets there.
And if we didn't live through Michael Jordan, if we didn't live through Kobe Bryant, maybe we wouldn't have that standard. Those guys created a standard that no one on that floor intending to stop them is going to stop them.
The will.
Yes.
Not beyond the talent, it was the will. Like,
exactly.
Because there's been talented guys all throughout. The will.
Let's go Jeff and Delco. Jeff, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Jeff.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for your show. Today, more than ever, it just really doesn't seem appropriate to talk about any other sports topics. Yeah. But I watch a lot of NBA, and I was really touched by the tributes yesterday during the games of each team taking a 24 or an 8-second violation to start the game. You know, some players had messages on their shoes. And I've heard some other ideas for tributes floated out there. You know, for example, all teams retiring 24 and 8 jersey numbers if they can. Immediate posthumous introductions to the Hall of Fame. But one thing that I heard that's really intriguing, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it, is revamping the NBA logo to show a silhouette of Kobe. And with the existing image being, you know, Jerry West, and with Jerry West being so connected and so adoring of Kobe, seems like it could be a beautiful changing of the guard, so to speak, of bringing the NBA into a new generation that Kobe so represents. But what do you guys think would be a fitting image to forever honor this guy's massive contribution to the game?
It's a really interesting question. I don't know. I mean, what's the enduring honoring of Michael Jordan? It's just like people choose the number 23, right? So in a way, seeing those numbers on the floor is more of a tribute than taking them out of circulation. In my view, I think that what they ought to do is, and I think I read this somewhere, where everybody wears 8 and 24. Like one team wears 8, the other team wears 24. And do a fitting tribute like that. When you're talking about doing the logo, then you're also forgetting a Michael Jordan. And is that fair? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but this is just so unprecedented with Kobe being gone now. I don't know. It's just some interesting idea.
I get it, and I understand why you would think that. It's kind of tough to get the logistics perfect for something like that. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We get the 4 o'clock hour ahead. Ketino Mobley is going to join us. Ketino Mobley, Chris Cardle, Doherty, great. Yeah, kind of in the same era with Kobe. I want to hear some story. They had to have crossed paths off the court and on the court, working out, doing stuff, competing against each other, not only in high school, but then in the NBA, where they both played in the Western Conference for a really long time. And I'm assuming that Ketino Mobley had to assume a defensive posture a lot and guard Kobe Bryant and what that was like. So we'll hear from him at 4:30. It's the Mike Misnelli Show back after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.